Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
ConocoPhillips says Marathon deal helps company keep high-grading portfolio. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Media reports last week had ConocoPhillips considering a sale of over $1 billion in non-core Delaware Basin assets as it looks to close its $22.5 billion acquisition of Marathon Oil. In response, ConocoPhillips officials told a reported telegram, quote, "Unless formally announced by our company, ConocoPhillips does not comment on ongoing business development or commercial activities," end quote. In the company's third quarter earnings call with analysts, Andy O'Brien, Senior Vice President of Strategy, Commercial, Sustainability, and Technology, said the company has been actively high-grading its portfolio over the last several years, and that the Marathon transaction, quote, "provides us an opportunity to continue that process. We've announced a target around $2 billion of non-core asset dispositions over the next several years, and we're very confident of achieving that. Now, we're not going to comment on the specifics of where they are. Our A&D activity in advance due to the commercial sensitivity, but activities are well underway on multiple disposition candidates at this stage," end quote. In its third quarter earnings report, the company announced record lower 48 production for the third quarter of 1.1 million barrels of oil equivalent per day, of which 781,000 was taken from the Permian, 246,000 from the Eagle Ford, and 107,000 from the Bakken. Nick Olds, Executive Vice President, Lower 48, told analysts the company had its best ever feet per day in the Delaware Basin for the entire quarter within the program. In the Permian Basin, he said production was up 8% year over year in the third quarter and is expected to be 6% for the full year. Quote, "We had a number of three-mile laterals in the Midland Basin. That is very strong performance in the third quarter," Olds said. At current rig activity levels, he said ConocoPhillips has two decades of inventory in the Permian that won't plateau until into the second decade.
Ring Energy teaches old formations new tricks. Advancing technology is teaching old dogs, in this case, old oil fields, new tricks. Quote, "I've been telling people for 4 years the Central Basin Platform has been overlooked for a long time," end quote, said Paul McKinney, Chairman of the Board and Chief Executive Officer of Ring Energy. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram, he said he is of the opinion there are several reasons the platform is overlooked. First, it requires more geoscience and geoengineering time. That compares to the Midland and Delaware Basin shales that hold tremendous resources that lend themselves to a manufacturing mode of development. Second, he said success depends on basing completion programs on the rock, something his company does. Quote, "It's not cookie cutter. It requires engineering time, geology tailoring completion programs," end quote, he said. Because of these challenges, McKinney said spending on the Central Basin Platform and Northwestern Shelf came to a halt. But companies like Ring and other small operators and private equity-backed companies took the time to look at opportunities in the area. Quote, "With today's technology like horizontal drilling, these locations are economic," end quote. "And zones that had been considered uneconomic are now economic," he said. Quote, "We've been able to deliver performance," end quote. "And now spending in the platform is picking up steam. Production from the platform won't add billions of barrels of reserves," quote, "but the good news from our standpoint is the opportunities remain large," end quote. McKinney predicted more opportunities will arise as assets find their ways to market amid the wave of upstream consolidation, and he said he is excited about the opportunities. Another cause of optimism for McKinney is the pending change in administration, which he said could bring more stability in the regulatory arena and lifting of restrictions on liquefied natural gas facilities. Through development of its Central Basin Platform assets, the company reported record production of 20,108 barrels of oil equivalent per day in the third quarter, exceeding the high end of guidance. Ring also divested non-core vertical wells and associated facilities for $5.5 million. That, combined with higher cash flow from operations, let the company reduce debt by $15 million. In the final quarter of the year, the company will finalize testing of efforts to unlock new producing zones within its existing acreage, representing a new phase of potential inventory growth through seeking to identify and develop new hydrocarbon resources organically. Quote, "We plan to produce our existing assets and reduce costs as much as possible, protecting our balance sheet," end quote, McKinney said. Ring is testing horizontal drilling in Crane County, and he said activity will be a function of the most economic ways to tap reserves. The company will also continue considering strategic acquisitions as a primary source of production and reserves growth. Since he joined Ring in 2020, McKinney said the company has made 3 acquisitions and has managed to grow those resources beyond what was expected when the acquisitions were made. He credits the company's success to fiscal discipline, strategic capital allocation, and the teams overseeing asset development. Quote, "We're taking modern technology of all kinds and applying it to older conventional areas, and it's paying dividends," end quote, he said. ConocoPhillips. Marathon deal helps company keep high-grading portfolio. Media reports last week had ConocoPhillips considering a sale of over $1 billion in non-core Delaware Basin assets as it looks to close its $22.5 billion acquisition of Marathon Oil. In response, ConocoPhillips officials told the Reporter-Telegram, quote, "Unless formally announced by our company, ConocoPhillips does not comment on ongoing business development or commercial activities," end quote. In the company's third quarter earnings call with analysts, Andy O'Brien, Senior Vice President of Strategy, Commercial, Sustainability, and Technology, said the company has been actively high-grading its portfolio over the last several years and that the Marathon transaction, quote, "provides us an opportunity to continue that process. We've announced a target around $2 billion of non-core asset dispositions over the next several years, and we're very confident of achieving that. Now, we're not going to comment on the specifics of where they are, our A&D activity in advance due to commercial sensitivity, but activities are well underway on multiple disposition candidates at this stage," end quote. In its third quarter earnings report, the company announced record lower 48 production for the third quarter of 1.147 million barrels of oil equivalent per day, of which 781,000 was from the Permian, 246,000 from the Eagle Ford, and 107,000 from the Bakken. Nick Olds, Executive Vice President, Lower 48, told analysts the company had its best ever feet per day in the Delaware Basin for the entire quarter within the program. In the Permian Basin, he said production was up 8% year-over-year in the third quarter and is expected to be 6% for the full year. Quote, "We had a number of 3-mile laterals in the Midland Basin. That is very strong performance in the third quarter," end quote, Olds said. At current rig activity levels, he said ConocoPhillips has 2 decades of inventory in the Permian that won't plateau until the second decade. A&M to open Bryan campus to nuclear reactors. Texas A&M University has started the process to offer companies land at its Rayless campus in Bryan for construction of the latest generation of nuclear reactors. If approved by federal regulators, the Texas A&M system would be the only higher education institution in the country with a commercial nuclear reactor site license, according to John Sharp, its chancellor. The university had offered up land it owns around the state for developers to build natural gas power plants in May. The university is now courting nuclear energy companies because its leaders believe building more nuclear plants is the, quote, "obvious and only answer to the power supply problems in Texas," end quote, Sharp said in an interview. Quote, "The reason that we decided to look at it is because we can. If you look at the politics of the West Coast, the politics of the East Coast, in some places even in Texas, any mention of the nuclear reactors is politically not feasible," That's not the case here, end quote, Sharp said. He cited existing nuclear facilities throughout campus, including a 1-megawatt reactor near Easterwood Airport used for research. Demand for power in Texas could almost double by 2030 as the state welcomes more people and businesses, especially power-hungry data centers necessary for the development of artificial intelligence, further straining the already stretched-thin Texas power grid. Though clean energy resources have grown rapidly, state leaders say they are still concerned about power supply because wind and solar farms are dependent on weather conditions and batteries can only store a couple hours' worth of power. Leading technology companies are faced with their own quandary. How can they thread the needle of building new data centers that need electricity 24/7 without popping up fossil fuels against their commitments to reduce carbon emissions? For many, one answer has been to revive the nation's nuclear energy industry, which began stagnating in the 1970s due to escalating cost and safety concerns. As big tech and nuclear power companies forge deals, however, few suitable locations have been identified for where those new plants will go, according to a statement issued Thursday by Texas A&M. That's where the university hopes to step in. Texas A&M's Board of Regents voted unanimously at a Thursday meeting to send the Nuclear Regulatory Commission a notice of its intent to seek an early site permit that would allow nuclear reactors to be built on Rellis campus, the first official step in providing land to developers. The goal is to have about 5 nuclear reactors from different companies scattered across parcels of the 2,300-acre campus by the early to mid-2030s, Sharp said. They'd range from 10 megawatts to 200 megawatts, much bigger than the research nuclear generator near the airport, and be connected to the grid operated by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, he said. 1 megawatt can power 250 Texas homes, according to ERCOT. Earlier this year, 23 organizations replied to a request from Texas A&M for feedback on its plan to potentially invite nuclear reactors to campus, Sharp said. The university declined to share how many companies or which ones responded to its subsequent request for proposals to build reactors, though the founder of Natura Resources, a nuclear company based in Abilene, told Texas lawmakers at a September committee hearing the company planned to submit one. The type of nuclear plants Texas A&M wants to host are known as small modular reactors, which are smaller and designed to be cheaper to build than traditional reactors. They're often, to Tata's, safer, though some environmental organizations and scientists remain skeptical. Texas A&M aims to serve as proving ground for the new technology, given that it has the largest nuclear engineering program in the country, Sharp said. How the university would participate in the projects is subject to the negotiations with potential developers, which are expected to begin soon. But even if the university's future site permit application is approved, a process that could take years, prospective developers would still have to go through other lengthy approvals while the advanced nuclear industry works to overcome significant cost barriers to prove its commercial viability. One company, Oregon-based New Scale Power, canceled its project last year after cost estimates skyrocketed to $9.3 billion from an initial $3 billion. The Public Utility Commission of Texas has put together a working group to study how the state can encourage nuclear development, with its report due to Governor Greg Abbott by December 1st. The Biden administration announced $900 million in funding to support small modular reactors in October, with applications due in January. It's unclear if the Department of Energy's enthusiasm for nuclear will continue under President-elect Donald Trump, who has expressed concerns about the technology's costs and safety. One of Houston's oldest refineries is about to shut down. LyondellBasell is on track to close its Houston refinery and exit the refining industry by the end of the first quarter of 2025, company executives said during a third-quarter earnings call Friday. The company's refinery, which produces transportation fuels including gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel, began operations in 1918 and is believed to be the oldest refinery on the Houston Ship Channel. Its impending closure marks a milestone for Houston's energy transition from fossil fuels, but also jeopardizes the livelihoods of the roughly 1,000 people who work at the site. The multinational chemicals company, headquartered in Houston, is weighing several potential reuses for the Houston site. LyondellBasell CEO Peter Vanacker said during Friday's earnings call. Those include repurposing it to recycle plastic waste into cracker feedstocks, as the company is already pursuing in Germany, or retrofitting it to produce renewable and bio-based feedstocks, Vanacker said. Quote, we continue on our path to close the refinery by the end of the first quarter of 2025, another strategic milestone for LyondellBasell. We're exiting a volatile, low-margin business to focus our resources and opportunities for sustainable value creation, end quote, Vanacker said during Friday's earnings call, according to a transcript provided by Capital IQ. LyondellBasell executives have also floated the possibility of converting the refinery into a hydrogen facility, though Chief Financial Officer Michael McMurray said during the company's second quarter earnings call in August that hydrogen projects are, quote, probably challenged, end quote, without subsidies, according to a Capital IQ transcript. McMurray's comment came in response to a question from an analyst about whether LyondellBasell's plans are contingent on funding from the Department of Energy, which could be at risk if former President Donald Trump regains the presidency. LyondellBasell plans to begin shutting down the first crude and coker train at the Houston refinery in January, said Kimberly Foley, the company's executive vice president of global oilfins and refining, during the Friday call. The company expects to begin shuttering the second crude and coker train, the gasoline-producing fluid catalytic cracking, and other ancillary units in February, she said. The company intends to retrain and redeploy, quote, as many affected employees as possible, end quote, Foley said Friday. Quote, nonetheless, some employees will end up leaving our company, and we will comply with all applicable laws and support our people as best possible, end quote, she said, according to Capital IQ's transcript. LyondellBasell expects to incur between $610 million to $980 million in total costs for its planned exit from the refinery business, according to the company's most recent filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. However, the company expects to release working capital that, quote, more than offsets, end quote, the cash cost of shutting down the refinery, Foley said during Friday's call. Community. Tim Jackal Jr. leads Casa de Amigos after overcoming childhood struggles. Tim Jackal Jr. remembers growing up in Midland, attending seven different elementary schools and graduating from Midland High School in 2010. Quote, there were many times when my mother couldn't afford a place to live, so we moved around a lot, end quote, Jackal recalled. Quote, we even lived in a women's shelter for a while. For a few years, I didn't have much consistency in my life as a young child, except for the after-school program at the Midland Boys and Girls Club. No matter what school I attended, every afternoon I would go to the Boys and Girls Club. That's where I met some of my best friends. Quote, there were other Midland nonprofit organizations that helped us out as well. I believe that's what gave me my passion for working in the nonprofit sector, end quote. Jackal is currently Director of Development and Donor Engagement for Casa de Amigos, one of the nonprofit agencies he says assisted his family when he was a child. He has been with a local social services organization for less than a year, but he hit the ground running to raise funds for Casa de Amigos. Quote, while I've always wanted to be involved in the Midland nonprofit community, I really didn't know what that would look like until I started volunteering with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, end quote, Jackal explained. Quote, at the time, I was working as a marketing representative for my community federal credit union, and they encouraged me to get involved in the community. So I coordinated the annual local Make-A-Wish golf tournament for several years. We increased funds generated from the golf tournament from $5,000 to $85,000. That gave me the bug for fundraising. I owe a lot of my fundraising skills to my grandmother, Rafaela Fejar. I lived with her from the time I was in sixth grade until I graduated from high school. She was just under 5 feet tall, but I knew I better do what she said. She never took no for an answer and taught me to do the same, end quote. While Jackal had been working in the Midland nonprofit sector for more than 14 years, he thought his career would take another direction when he was playing football as an offensive tackle for the Midland High Bulldogs. Quote, I fractured my sternum during my senior year in high school, end quote, he said. Quote, before that happened, I was hoping to attend college on a football scholarship. I then pivoted and made what I believe to be one of the better decisions of my life. I enrolled at Midland College. From 2010 to 13, I worked full-time during the day and attended night classes. I would get off work at 5:30, drive to Midland College, quickly eat a sandwich in my car, and go to class from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock most evenings. Even though I was extremely tired and busy, I had so much fun and have very fond memories of my time at Midland College. Quote, on the weekends and in the evenings when I didn't have class, I went to the MC Fitness Center and played basketball with some of the guys on the MC basketball team. In fact, I have a souvenir from those pickup basketball games. I broke my finger and I just taped it with scotch tape and kept on playing. Now I can't get that finger to lay flat, so every time I look at it, I remember those great times at Midland College. End quote. Jackal graduated from Midland College with an associate degree in business and now gives back to Midland College as vice president of the Midland College Alumni and Former Students Association. After graduating from MC, he continued his education taking online classes from Colorado State University, where he earned a Bachelor of Business Administration degree majoring in business marketing. He also recently completed the Nonprofit Management Center's Nonprofit Executive Leadership course. During the time Jackal was attending Midland College, he worked as an intern for My Community Federal Credit Union and continued employment there for a total of 7 years. He then found a place in nonprofit development as the Senior Development Manager for Distinguished Events with the Midland Chapter of the American Cancer Society. Quote, working at the American Cancer Society enabled me to learn in depth about fundraising and donor stewardship, end quote, he explained. Quote, I was also able to attend American Cancer Society galas all over the nation and see behind the scenes. That's where I really learned how to build fundraising teams and coordinate events, end quote. For 3 years in a row, Jackal coordinated the annual Cattle Baron's Ball. In 2019, the last year he coordinated the event, the gala raised close to $1 million and had the lowest expense rate of any American Cancer Society event in the nation. Quote, my goal for 2020 was to go above the $1 million mark, but I never got a chance because of the COVID pandemic, end quote, Jackal said. After the pandemic, he accepted a job as the development director for Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin, an organization that held happy childhood memories for him. Quote, that's where I finally met my event goal of raising over $1 million, end quote, he stated. Quote, we raised over $1.4 million with the help of our wonderful entertainer, Jay Leno, end quote. Earlier this year, after being highly recommended by several prominent community members, Casa de Amigos offered Jackal his current position, where in the first few months of employment, he helped raise over $160,000. His family life also keeps him busy. He and his wife, Courtney, have been married for 5.5 years. The couple have a 4-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son together. Their blended family also consists of a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter. A favorite vacation spot is the Fort Davis area, where Jackal said he is able to, quote, unplug, end quote, for a bit. Even though he broke a finger playing basketball when he was attending Midland College, Jackal still enjoys the sport, usually playing with his brother, Michael, at the Midland YMCA, another local nonprofit organization that Jackal proudly promotes. Quote, I'll always be in the nonprofit sector, end quote, he said. Quote, without the amazing volunteers and community support, these beautiful organizations that help so many people would not exist, and my job and purpose would not exist. I want to wake up every morning and know that I'm doing something that genuinely helps people in this community, end quote. 7 CASA volunteers sworn in will act as advocates for foster children. Judge Ellen Griffith swore in 7 new court-appointed special advocates, CASA, at the Midland County Courthouse on Monday, November 4th. Brandy Erasmus, John Hill, Danny Canaveri, Scott Bowman, Sam Ferrier, Sandy Stewart, and Jordan Parrish were sworn in as CASA volunteers and will help advocate for children and families involved in the foster care systems. Quote, the 7 sworn in today is only part of our reigning class that contained 11 people, end quote, said volunteer recruiter for CASA of West Texas, Ariel Sanchez. Quote, since I've been here, this is the biggest training class and group of newly sworn in advocates. It's exciting, end quote. The new class of CASA volunteers will be assigned to a child or sibling group and will commit to advocating for them until the closure of their case. They will also get to know adults in the child they serve life, such as parents, foster parents, teachers, doctor therapists, and more. Quote, it is a long-term commitment and requires a lot of heart. But when children in the foster care system see that there is someone committed to lifting up their voice and walking alongside them, it can make a world of difference, end quote, Sanchez said. Quote, our volunteers are dedicated to doing their very best of behalf of the children and families they serve, end quote. CASA volunteers undergo 39 hours of in-depth pre-service training before they are appointed by a judge to their case. Quote, even in my pre-service training alone, I've seen the remarkable positive impact that CASA volunteers can have on the children and families they serve, end quote, said Sam Ferrier, a newly sworn in CASA volunteer. According to a press release by CASA of West Texas, the volunteers advocate for family reunification as their primary goal whenever it is safe and possible to do so. If reunification is not an option, volunteers may advocate for a child to live with another relative or family friend or to be placed in an adoptive home. CASA volunteers work to make sure that the children they serve are safe and have the resources they need to grow and thrive. They also work to build lifelong support systems for the families they serve that will continue after a case closes. Quote, swear-in days are my favorite days, end quote, Sanchez said. Quote, to see this group of dedicated community members step up for kids in their community is an incredible thing to witness, end quote. Sanchez added that volunteers come from all different backgrounds but have one thing in common. Their big hearts committed to helping children in the community. Quote, to see that in action by becoming a CASA volunteer is inspiring to see, end quote, Sanchez said. CASA of West Texas currently serves seven counties in West Texas, according to its website.
Cirque Italia set to dazzle Odessans with new production. Have you ever imagined a country boy's adventure from farm life to the bustling lights of the big city? Cirque Italia is thrilled to present their new production, a captivating story about Raphael, a farm boy swept away by a tornado who lands in the heart of the city's chaos. Join Cirque for this extraordinary journey of self-discovery and unity in their upcoming performances in Odessa, November 28th through December 1st. Embark on a comedic escapade with Raphael, the clown, as he seamlessly transitions from farm life to the dazzling lights of the city, weaving humor into both worlds. As Raphael navigates the city, he encounters many personalities, reflecting on the diverse facets of urban life. Cirque Italia's talented performers bring these characters to life, celebrating the rich tapestry of human experience. From the farm to the city, Cirque Italia Silver promises a unique and unforgettable spectacle, a news release said. Clown number 2, Head of Security, guarantees a hilarious and safe experience for all attendees, ensuring laughter echoes alongside security measures. Witness the striking trampoline wall, a new act adorned in graffiti, paying homage to the vibrant street culture of the city. The Straps Act showcases the intellectual prowess of nerds, delivering a breathtaking performance that transcends conventional circus boundaries. Marvel at the Rolls Bola, a sophisticated display featuring the city's elite high society, and experience the poignant Fire Act, shedding light on the challenges faced by the homeless in the urban landscape. Quick Change introduces a myriad of characters with seamless transformations, adding a touch of formality and funk to the spectacle. Feel the swinging vibes of the Rope Act, embracing the free-spirited essence of the 60s hippie culture, and revel in the rebellious energy of juggling, injecting a punk rock flair into the traditional circus ambiance. The hand-to-hand act unfolds a love story amid the bustling and hustle of city life. While Skates captures the high-energy spirit of athletic competition in a cheer-jock extravaganza. Concluding the grand performance in the street, the swing act, a humorous nod to the city's senior citizens, providing a fitting finale that brings together the myriad characters in an epic country line dance. This unique blend of acts reinforces the show's central theme, a celebration of diversity, unity, and inclusivity, echoing the timeless ideals of the American circus. Don't miss the chance to experience the magic as they blend the charm of the countryside with the vibrancy of the city. Join Cirque Italia for a night of laughter, awe and a celebration of diversity. Manuel Rebakai, president and owner of Cirque Italia, is tremendously proud of his circus heritage and feels extremely privileged to be able to share it with you in such a fun and memorable way, the release said. Cirque Italia continues to contribute to the modernization of performing acts and the circus industry by abiding by a strict animal-free policy. Tickets may be purchased online at circuitalia.com/tickets or by phone 941-704-8572. They will respond to text messages. For more information, visit circuitalia.com. If you go, win 7:30 p.m. November 28th, 7:30 p.m. November 29th, 1:30 p.m., 4:30 p.m., and 7:30 p.m. November 30th, 1:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. December 1st. Wear Ector County Coliseum parking lot under the stunning blue and white big top tent, 4201 Andrews Highway. Box office hours. The box office opens on site on Tuesday, the week of the show, days with no scheduled shows, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., days with scheduled shows, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Investigations underway in City of Odessa. Despite letters sent to the Texas Attorney General's office and the Texas Department of Public Safety saying otherwise, there is no abuse of official capacity investigation underway within the City of Odessa. However, Odessa City Attorney Dan Jones confirmed Monday night that Deputy City Manager Agapito Bernal is currently being investigated by an outside law firm hired by the city, and he intends to ask Exeter County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan to seek a Texas Rangers investigation into Equipment Services Director Chris Adams. Last month, the Odessa American filed two open records requests with the City of Odessa after receiving tips that complaints had been filed against Bernal with Human Resources and City Manager John Beckmeyer, and that Adams had been misusing his government purchase card. The Odessa American was later notified the city had asked the Texas Attorney General's office for a legal opinion on both of its requests. According to a letter sent to the AG's office by Jones on October 18th, the requests were tied together, and the release of the information would interfere with the detection, investigation, or prosecution of crime. The city has a legitimate interest in preserving the secrecy of its records from the eyes of defendants and their counsel in criminal actions, Jones wrote. He further stated the city's internal auditor is still investigating, and the City of Odessa will need to gather all evidence for the Texas Rangers, and the premature release of information may hinder their investigation. It is in the city's opinion that the Exhibit B and Exhibit C are related to Texas Penal Code, Penal 39.02, Abuse of Official Capacity, Jones wrote. In a second letter dated October 18th, Jones informed DPS's Assistant General Counsel, M.L. Calcote, that the OA had requested information about Bernal and Adams, and he'd sought an opinion from the AG about the release of such information. Jones noted the information sought by the OA include records we received from you or from your company. He was informed the lawyer, she could also object to the release of the documents. However, emails released by the City of Odessa Monday indicate Calcote was confused when the city's public information coordinator sent her copies of the Odessa American's TPIA request on October 23rd along with other documents to review. She was informed Jones had spoken with Texas Ranger John Shook, and Jones told Shook, would be speaking with the Ector County Attorney's Office as to how to proceed. On October 24th, Calco responded, "At this time, the Rangers do not have an investigation. You may want to talk to the DA since I believe that office would be the entity that would ask the Rangers to open an investigation." On Monday night, Jones said he will be seeking an appointment with Gallivan to discuss Gallivan seeking a Rangers investigation into Adams about the purchase card allegations and discoveries made by the city's internal auditor, Kayla Hardy. Also reached Monday, Gallivan said, "If a formal complaint is filed and there is some evidence of a criminal act, yes, I would ask." As for Bernal, Jones said, "There's an internal investigation going on right now. He's being investigated by an outside law firm for possible wrongdoing." He declined to comment. Bernal is one of four city officials who have three-year contracts with the city that would require the city to pay out the remainder of their contracts when they leave, regardless of the circumstances. The others are Beckmeyer, Jones, and City Secretary Norma Aguilar. Ector County Commissioner Don Stringer emailed Beckmeyer back in August that Adams was using a city-owned vehicle to drive back and forth to his home in Lubbock, thus violating a city policy. Emails obtained by the Odessa American under the TPIA show Beckmeyer told Adams to stop using the vehicle to commute. Other documents the OA obtained also showed four of Adams's employees filed separate, unrelated complaints against him in October 2023, and none resulted in disciplinary action being taken against him. Employees accused Adams of being disrespectful to employees and vendors, drinking at a city event and driving afterward, discussing matters of a sexual nature, being a cool club member within the city, and openly stating he was going to use his purchase card to pay for golf. Bright Star Memorial to close temporarily for final construction and landscaping. The Bright Star Memorial on the University of Texas Permian Basin's campus will be temporarily closed to the public starting Tuesday, November 12th, to allow for additional construction elements and landscaping enhancements. These updates are intended to enrich the memorial's appearance and ensure a lasting and impactful experience for all visitors. The memorial will reopen briefly from November 25th through December 1st to provide families and visitors an opportunity to enjoy the plaza over the Thanksgiving holiday. Following this period, the Bright Star Memorial will close once again from December 2nd to January 2025 to finalize the remaining construction and landscape details. UTPB appreciates the community's patience and support as we complete the enhancements to the Bright Star Memorial. We look forward to reopening in early 2025 and providing a meaningful space for reflection and connection for years to come, a news release said. Road rage incident leads to arrest. An Odessa man was arrested Saturday night after another man accused him of pointing a gun at him during a road rage incident. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received word of a road rage incident near 36th Avenue and North Dixie Boulevard around 9 p.m. They were told the suspect was driving a tan Chevrolet Trailblazer, had a silver revolver with a laser on it, and he was wearing a striped shirt and black hat, the report stated. The alleged victim, 32, told officers the man exited his vehicle, pointed the revolver at him, and said, "Keep expletive around," making him fear for his life, the report stated. An officer driving down the 1100 block of East 36th Street found the vehicle parked in a driveway and a man matching the suspect's description standing on the porch, the report stated, According to the report, a witness told officers, they saw the man, identified as Christopher Perez, 50, come home a few minutes later and walk toward a clock on his porch. Officers found a .38 caliber silver revolver with a laser near the clock and cocaine inside Perez's vehicle, the report stated. Perez was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, unlawful carrying of a weapon, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. His bail was set at $82,000.
Lady of Shalott has performances left. Odessa College's production of The Lady of Shalott has three more performances left, November 14th, 15th, and 16th, all at 7 p.m. It will be staged in the courtyard outside the Globe Theater on campus and in the Black Box Theater. Theater director Aaron Gons said it offers a chance for audience members to move around. If you want a better angle of something live happening in front of you, we encourage people to move and see it, and the actors are rehearsed that way, Gons said. The theater department collaborated with the Fab Lab, Culinary Program, and Construction Department for the production. Students in the culinary department have crafted complimentary treats themed to the show. Gons said this was something they did for Much Ado About Anything, and have continued to do, and will continue to do moving forward because theater is a full sensory experience at the Globe. The play is based on a poem by Lord Alfred Tennyson. According to the Odessa Arts website, the work takes the audience on an unforgettable journey into the heart of Arthurian legend. Tennyson's poem, The Lady of Shalott, has enthralled readers for over a century. The mysterious tale of a woman cursed and trapped in a tower has captivated artists the world over, inspiring countless paintings and songs, all in service of answering the ultimate question, who was the Lady of Shalott? Gon said he knew the poem as a song sung by Lorena McKennett. My mom bought the CD when I was a little Canadian errand, and growing up, she would play the CD over and over again. I never even knew it was a poem. I just knew it was a song. Later, when I got to school, I discovered it was a poem, he said. Gons could identify with the story. I have a bunch of teammates right now in set, and costume and actors and choreography, who can feel that story too, and who don't want to just show up to put a show, but want to unlock something. Want to bring audiences to a type of truth, not just about Arthurian legend, but also everything that's hidden in art, Gon said. This is not a show that's right for Odessa. It's a show that's right for human beings, he added. The show has a cast of 15 actors. Gon is the director, and there is a costume designer, stage manager, lighting designer, and set designer. We flew in two fight choreographers from Los Angeles to help with some elaborate sword fighting that we have in this piece. But more importantly, to increase the professional aspect of our program. We want this program to be a platform, a trampoline, for people to be professionally successful in the performing arts. And now that I'm here, I'm bringing the connections that I have made in the profession from California and New York so that our actors get to work with people who are in the profession, who are, yes, helping them in the show, but are growing their abilities in life, Gon said. The fight choreographers were from Sword Fights Incorporated in California. They had a guest artist from Colorado to help with lighting. He's an expert at voice and speech, textual work with actors, so he put in that time as well, Gon said. He added that the guest artists were flown in about a week through a grant from Odessa Arts. It's part of the direction our program is moving in the future, which is for every main stage production that we do in the spring and in the fall. We're going to fly in two guest artists to be able to elevate the production and elevate the professional know-how of our performing artists, also to build bridges and teach cast members about their craft, Gon said. In the spring, they will stage the Shakespeare play, Cymbeline. The show will be in the outdoor amphitheater, and they will do a special performance at the downtown location. It's about a king at the end of his life, just like Shakespeare was at the end of his life, whose kingdom is one. Who has everything going for him. The only thing he hasn't settled is his own family, his own daughter, who loves somebody who is not of royal lineage, gets married right at the start of the play to somebody below royal lineage. King Cymbeline thinks of that as a long-term threat to his kingdom and banishes her husband, and therein starts the madness, Don said. Advance tickets for the Lady of Shalott are sold out, but there will be a waiting list at the gate. Tickets are $15. As the theater program grows, Gon said they will start to have main stage productions and student productions. On a separate note, Gon said they will be introducing a Marjorie Morris scholarship starting next year. If a person wants to do this professionally, we are going to make sure they can train with us and it won't cost them a penny, he said. For the first year, they are looking at 5 awardees who will be able to study in the drama program and not have to pay and have all their courses taken care of, and still have extra money on the side to be able to pay for stuff like gas and some other things that they're doing. Students have to get high grades in their classes to be part of the show and contribute to the carabays that are held each month. They have to be fully immersed in the muscle building that we're doing over here, and assuming they do their work, we are investing in them, because we are in the space right now where we want to grow out our program, and we want to prove to people that our program creates professional success stories. It's not just about a place where you could study and train. It's about a place where you can make something of yourself in the world, Gon said. Those selected for the scholarships will be announced sometime in the late spring or early summer. A Globe Film Festival is also in the works for the end of January and early February. Odessa College's production of The Lady of Shalott has 3 performances left, November 14th, 15th, and 16th. The play is based on a poem by Lord Alfred Tennyson. Food Bank Seeks Community Support to Meet Foundation Match by Ruth Campbell. The West Texas Food Bank is asking for the community's help to meet a $100,000 match from the Abel Hanger Foundation. Chief Executive Officer Libby Stevens said contributions to the food bank will be doubled between now and January 1st thanks to the Abel Hanger Foundation. The foundation has been a longtime supporter of the food bank and has offered the match for many years. They know that this is one of the biggest needs that we have during the year, Stevens said. We're going to use those funds that we receive from Abel Hanger and the community to hopefully make over $200,000 to purchase food throughout the year, she added. The West Texas Food Bank finished last year providing close to 14 million pounds of food to the 19 counties that it serves. Our need has increased so much over the last several years. A lot of that has to do, of course, with just the cost of living, with inflation, the cost of groceries, the cost of fuel, the cost of your electric bills, your car insurance. Even for us, the cost of food has gone up, so not only are we serving more people, we are having to spend more money on food than we ever have. This grant will definitely go toward us being able to purchase food for the 19 counties in which we serve, Stephen said. She added that anytime the food bank asks for help, the community steps up, whether it's in volunteer time or donations. West Texas is such an amazing place, and I always think that I'm really lucky that I live here, but that I get to work in such an amazing organization with such amazing community support, Stevens said. She asked that the community reach out where they can and help donate to the food bank meet the Abel Hanger match. We'd also like to please bring your families out to come to volunteer. We have some family volunteer days that are coming up, and we definitely have lots of things to do. We'll be giving out turkeys this year. We'll be doing our normal distribution lines. We'll be doing sorting and processing stuff that's donated from all the amazing food drives that we have going on throughout the community right now. There are lots of different ways that people can get involved with the food bank to help those in need this holiday season, Steven said. The food bank usually offers turkey vouchers and gives out turkeys over Thanksgiving and Christmas. We are excited to be able to continue that tradition this year, Stevens said. She added that the food bank wouldn't be where it is today without the support of the Abel Hanger Foundation and the other donors that support it. Abel Hanger continually stands with us to help fight hunger in our community, Stevens said. To support the match, people can visit the food bank website, wtxfoodbank.org, where there is a donate button. You can just go there, or you can go to any of our social media platforms, and also you can keep your eyes open for direct mail. Or you can call the West Texas Food Bank in Midland or Odessa, and we'll happily take credit cards and those kinds of things. Or you can always stop by one of our campuses in Midland, Odessa, and you can drop off a check, Stephen said. This day in history. Today is Wednesday, November 13th, the 318th day of 2024. there are 48 days left in the year. Today in history, on November 13, 2015, Islamic State militants carried out a set of coordinated attacks in Paris at the National Stadium, in a crowded concert hall, in restaurants and on streets, killing 130 people in the worst attack on French soil since World War II. Also on this date, in 1775, during the Revolutionary War, American troops captured Montreal under the command of Continental Army General Richard Montgomery. In 1841, James Braid first saw a demonstration of animal magnetism, which led to his study of the subject he eventually called hypnosis. In 1861, a letter was written by the Reverend Mark R. Watkinson petitioning the Treasury Department to recognize Almighty God on American coins. The department eventually decided on the motto, "In God We Trust." In 1909, 259 men and boys were killed when fire erupted inside a coal mine in Cherry, Illinois. In 1940, the Walt Disney film Fantasia, featuring animated segments set to classical music, had its world premiere in New York. In 1956, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed a lower court ruling which found Alabama bus segregation laws were illegal. In 1964, Pope Paul VI gave up the jewel-encrusted gold papal crown, donating it to the poor at a service in Rome. In 1971, the U.S. space probe Mariner 9 went into orbit around Mars, becoming the first spacecraft to orbit another planet. In 1982, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial was dedicated to the National Mall in Washington, D.C. In 1985, some 23,000 residents of Armero, Colombia died when a volcanic mudslide buried the city. In 2001, U.S.-backed Northern Alliance fighters in Afghanistan entered Kabul as Taliban forces retreated from the capital city. Today's birthdays. Actor Joe Mantegna is 77. Hockey Hall of Famer Gilbert Perrault is 74. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland is 72. Actor Francis Conroy is 72. Actor Chris Noth is 70. Actor-comedian Whoopi Goldberg is 69. Republican U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska is 60. Talk show host Jimmy Kimmel is 57. Actor Steve Zahn is 57. Local news roundup. Road rage incident leads to arrest. An Odessa man was arrested Saturday night after another man accused him of pointing a gun at him during a road rage incident. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received word of a road rage incident near 36th Avenue and North Dixie Boulevard around 9 p.m. They were told the suspect was driving a tan Chevrolet Trailblazer, had a silver revolver with the laser on it, and he was wearing a striped shirt and black hat, the report stated. The alleged victim, 32, told officers the man exited his vehicle, pointed the revolver at him, and said, "Keep expletive around," making him fear for his life, the report stated. An officer driving down the 1100 block of East 36th Street found the vehicle parked in the driveway and a man matching the suspect's description standing on the porch, the report stated. According to the report, a witness told officers they saw the man, identified as Christopher Perez, 50, come home a few minutes later and walk toward a clock on his porch. Officers found a .38 caliber silver revolver with a laser near the clock and cocaine inside Perez's vehicle, the report stated. Perez was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, unlawful carrying of a weapon, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. His bail was set at $82,000. Man accused of threatening girlfriend with knife, gun. A 34-year-old man was arrested on a warrant issued last month after his girlfriend told authorities he threatened to kill her in front of her 17-month-old child while armed with a gun. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, a 36-year-old woman came into the Sheriff's Department on October 18th to file a report. The woman told deputies that on October 12th, Ty James grabbed a knife during an argument with her and held it as though he was going to stab her, the report stated. Fearing for her life, the woman said she reached into her purse, which was slung over her body, to get her pistol. But James pinned her to the ground and began biting her back to get her to surrender the purse. After giving up her purse, the woman said James grabbed her pistol and pointed it at her and her toddler, stating he was going to kill her, the report stated. An aggravated assault with a deadly weapon warrant was issued, and James was booked into the Ector County Jail on that warrant Friday. His bond has been set at $50,000. Educator rises from avid tutor to teacher/coordinator. Since she was a young girl, Krista Galvan wanted to go into education. A former avid tutor, Galvan is now an avid teacher and coordinator at Odessa Collegiate Academy. AVID stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. Its mission is to close the opportunity gap by preparing all students for college readiness and success in a global society. It also teaches students note-taking, time management, and organizational skills. Galvan worked in the office at Ector Junior High before it became Ector Middle School. She was also a GED tutor at Catholic Charities. Her turn as an AVID tutor when it was first implemented at Ector County ISD was that it planted the seed for her to pursue education. As a further backstory, Galvan was helping her parents organize things when they were selling their house and found a chicken soup for the preteen sold journal that she'd purchased at a book sale when she was in about fourth grade. I'm flipping through that journal and one of the questions says, "What would you like to be when you get older?" And in there, I put a teacher, Galvan recalled. She told her mother she didn't remember writing that or wanting to be a teacher. Galvan wanted to be an interior designer or an optometrist. She earned a bachelor's degree in Spanish from the University of Texas Permian Basin. She was continuing her studies at UTPB when she got a phone call about a Spanish teacher opening at the Alternative Education Center and stayed for 2 years. There were so many different things that I wanted to do, but it kind of seems now like it's full circle, Galvan said. I think the Lord kind of moves you. During the summer, after her second year at Alternative Center, she got a call from Bowie Middle School about an AVID coordinator position. I guess that's exactly where the Lord needed me, because that started my journey, Galvan said. This is her fourth year at Odessa Collegiate Academy teaching AVID to juniors and seniors. She also is the AVID coordinator at OCA. There is an opportunity to really guide the students, maybe in different aspects that they might not be aware of. It definitely gives a sense of family, which I really enjoy. The kids become family, like brothers and sisters. They help each other out, and just like any other family, they have their ups and downs. But I also enjoy the process, Galvan said. For 7th and 8th graders, she got to see the foundational parts of AVID. Students learning how to take notes, organizing themselves, checking their grades, and learning how to communicate and make eye contact with people. The students at OCA were also of her first 7th graders, and she has gotten to see them through their high school careers, where they are applying to college and for scholarships and graduating. One of them was valedictorian at OCA, and one was the valedictorian at New Tech. In their college essays, some said her class had helped them through things that were going on at home or internally. They also found a safe space in her AVID classroom. I think them seeing me kind of gave them that little piece of home, that AVID family, that AVID home that they first built in middle school. I've definitely enjoyed the journey and definitely enjoy seeing the students grow in maturity, how they see themselves and what they see for their future, Galvan said. Principal James Ramage said he has worked with Galvan the last 4 years. Her starting as an AVID tutor and eventually becoming a teacher is such a great success story. She works very hard with our kids and is very dedicated. She has a vested interest in the kids being successful and keeps up with the great things they do after graduation, he said. We are thankful to have her here at OCA, Ramage said. STD epidemic slows as new syphilis and gonorrhea cases fall. The Associated Press, New York. The U.S. syphilis epidemic slowed dramatically last year. Gonorrhea cases fell and chlamydia cases remained below pre-pandemic levels, according to federal data released Tuesday. The numbers represented some good news about sexually transmitted diseases, which experienced some alarming increases in past years due to declining condom use, inadequate sex education, and reduced testing and treatment when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. Last year, cases of the most infectious stages of syphilis fell 10% from the year before. the first substantial decline in more than two decades. Gonorrhea cases dropped 7%, marking a second straight year of decline and bringing the number below what it was in 2019. I'm encouraged, and it's been a long time since I felt that way, about the nation's epidemic of sexually transmitted infections, said the CDC's Dr. Jonathan Merman. Something is working. More than 2.4 million cases of syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia were diagnosed and reported last year. 1.6 million cases of chlamydia, 600,000 cases of gonorrhea, and more than 209,000 cases of syphilis. Syphilis is a particular concern. For centuries, it was a common but feared infection that could deform the body and end in death. New cases plummeted in the U.S. starting in the 1940s when infection-fighting antibiotics became widely available, and they trended down for a half century after that. By 2002, however, cases began rising again, with men who have sex with other men being disproportionately affected. The new report found cases of syphilis in the early, most infectious stages dropped 13% among gay and bisexual men. It was the first such drop since the agency began reporting data for that group in the mid-2000s. However, there was a 12% increase in the rate of cases of unknown or later-stage syphilis, a reflection of people infected years ago. Cases of syphilis in newborns passed on from infected mothers also rose. There were nearly 4,000 cases, including 279 stillbirths and infant deaths. This means pregnant women are not being tested often enough, said Dr. Jeffrey Klausner, a professor of medicine at the University of Southern California. What caused some of the STD trends to improve? Several experts say one contributor is the growing use of an antibiotic as a morning-after pill. Studies have shown that taking doxycycline within 72 hours of unprotected sex cuts the risk of developing syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. In June, the CDC started recommending doxycycline as a morning-after pill specifically for gay and bisexual men and transgender women who recently had an STD diagnosis. But health departments and organizations in some cities have been giving the pills to people for a couple of years. Some experts believe that the 2022 monkeypox outbreak, which mainly hit gay and bisexual men, may have had a lingering effect on sexual behavior in 2023, or at least on people's willingness to get tested when strange sores appeared. Another factor may have been an increase in the number of health workers testing people for infections, doing contact tracing, and connecting people to treatment. Congress gave $1.2 billion to expand the workforce over 5 years, including $600 million to states, cities, and territories that get STD prevention funding from CDC. Last year had the most activity with that funding throughout the U.S., said David Harvey, executive director of the National Coalition of STD Directors. However, Congress ended the funds early as a part of last year's debt ceiling deal, cutting off $400 million. Some people have already lost their jobs, said a spokeswoman for Harvey's organization. Still, Harvey said he had reasons for optimism, including the growing use of doxycycline as a push for at-home STD test kits. Also, there are reasons to think the next presidential administration could get behind STD prevention. In 2019, then-President Donald Trump announced a campaign to eliminate the U.S. HIV epidemic by 2030. Federal health officials later clarified that the actual goal was a huge reduction in new infections, fewer than 3,000 a year.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.